The fur analysis can measure 10,000 to 100,000 smaller increments than what can be determined on a blood test. So oftentimes things are missed in blood, which will actually show up on the fur tissue mineral analysis test. And also, the blood has to stay pretty consistent. It doesn't have a wide range because it's about saving you right now. And so this interstitial fluid is what we're really looking at when we measure a hair test, which is being distributed for all the metabolic processes. Everything physiological that's happening in the body is going through the interstitial fluid. It's not about the blood.
Welcome to the Pet Care Report podcast by Pet Summits. Here's your natural cat healthcare host, Dr. Megan Barrett.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for tuning in again. We've got a very special guest today, Dr. Ava Frick. She is a pioneering veterinarian with 42 years of expertise in animal chiropractic, rehab, and nutrition. Recognized globally for her contributions to veterinary microcurrent therapy and multiple published works, Dr. Frick has been distinguished as the Hearts Veterinarian of the Year runner-up and is an inductee into the Animal Chiropractic Hall of Fame. And most importantly, she is a cat person. So welcome, Dr. Frick. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you for having me. I always enjoy being able to share some information, especially for all my cat friends out there.
Me too. Okay, so today we're going to be talking about one of your areas of expertise, which is hair mineral tissue analysis. So for those unfamiliar with this, can you explain what it is and how it is changing the landscape of feline health assessments?
Very good. Hair tissue mineral analysis is a simple laboratory test. The reason it's so good for cats is because you really don't have to take them anywhere. The fur can be collected at home. And how this works is that when the hair follicle is growing, it's being fed by the interstitial fluid, which contains all of the nutrients, all the hormone precursors, everything that's floating around in the body that's feeding all of the other organs. And it's trapped within that hair follicle as the fur comes out. And so now with the laboratory test, we're able to exude that information and find out what mineral levels are, what toxic metals might be present, and understanding how this works, which your research goes back way into the 50s and 60s. So this is nothing new, but it's really gaining a foothold within the veterinary profession because of the fact that many people like myself are starting to utilize it more. The CDC uses it for a lot of different testing for chemicals and toxins and things like that. And so there's a lot of substantiation. And with the new technology, as everything's gotten more modern, it's easier and easier to apply it. And the standards have gotten even more consistent and reliable.
That's very cool. So it's almost like a time capsule for what's going on with your cat's health, right?
Very good. It is exactly it. And I talk to it like it's talk about it like it's a globe, like you're being able to see what had happened in the past. And this can start with young kittens. You don't have to wait until there's something wrong, but it tells you where they've been, and then it also gives you a forecast of where they would be or could be if you didn't alter what's happening right now.
Yeah, I feel like it can be hard to know exactly whether the diet you're feeding is adequate or not.
Yeah, and you can oftentimes feed a really high quality. They could be feeding the cats the raw diet and it's really, really good, but maybe they've got a little metabolic situation going on, or they've got some of these other nutrient deficiencies and the food can't change the issues that are happening. So even like in a stressed state, the gut shuts down and you might be eating well, but it doesn't get assimilated, it's not absorbed, and it's not being utilized. And then sometimes we have the chemicals and the toxins that are sitting in the spot where these really good nutrients are supposed to be, but you don't know that. So that's where this hair test comes in. And again, with the cats, they don't, dogs too, but it can be done at home. You know, cats hate getting in the toter, going for the car ride, most of them, and then being in that strange environment and the barking dogs and all the sounds, and it's really scary for them. And we know when they go through all of that and you draw blood, there's changes in the blood that happened because of the stress effect of what the adrenals did, because the blood is that minute of that day. But this is actually more like doing a fructosamine for glucose. It's a portrait of what happened over the past 90 days. And it's not instantly affected by that second of, oh my gosh, I'm afraid, and some surge of cortisol and hormones and sugar levels and all that. So we really do get a better average of how they are every day in their life, and then can start to determine what do we need to do about that.
So is it just like a tuft of hair that you would need?
Oh, we need about a half a teaspoon or so, but you know, like most cats, that's not a problem. I usually shave it from, because we want to get close to the skin, because that's the most recent. Long haired, so like if you had a Persian or something, you want to cut it back to about an inch to an inch and a half, not more than that. Because the longer it is, the older the information. And so it's not now, it's still way back there somewhere. So about a half a teaspoon of generous volume of that. And like I said, I clip from the neck or the tummy, mostly just because you don't have a bald spot that you have to see all the time and wait for it to grow in. So we shave it from there and it goes to the laboratory. It takes about 3 to 4 weeks to get the results. And then we get information that you don't get in the blood about the interrelationship of the thyroid, the adrenal glands, and the pituitary. All three of those, there's information. There's information about how well that individual body at this point in time can assimilate carbohydrates. Also how they're doing with proteins. So we can look at this test and tell, do they have enough enzymes in their stomach or do they need some enzymes to help by the different minerals? Are they getting enough protein? So is it in the food, as in like a cat that's on a kibble diet is probably going to have a low phosphorus because there's not really quality protein in that. And if they're eating more of a raw diet, then I would expect that their phosphorus level should be more at the normal range because phosphorus is where protein is. And so we can tell from that how well their diet is. And then you have this black and white where you can measure, okay, we're going to make these changes. Let's see how this individual does. So you can see changes then that come about.
Oh, that's so cool. So is it something where an owner would need a veterinarian to order it for them, or can they just get it themselves?
So yes, they would need to have a veterinarian that was trained in this and was doing this kind of testing. So there's more and more of us out there. And certainly, you can find somebody in your area. I do a lot of virtual testing so people can contact me, and then I get the sample, send it to the lab, and then work them through what we need to do and what some recommendations are. The other thing that's really cool for the cats, just I can give you some ones that I've worked with. There was a Maine Coon cat that had been being treated for diabetes, and the cat was on like 6 or 8 units, and this had been going on for a while, and he really wasn't responding. His sugar levels were still all over the place. So we do the test. We find out he's got some toxic metals. His mineral levels are skewed. And really the whole bottom line was his liver. So once we corrected this program, got his liver handled, there was no diabetes at all. And so we wouldn't have, I wasn't the traditional veterinarian that saw him initially. You know, they came to me because of what I do. And it's like, he's not getting better and this is going nowhere. We want something different. And we hear you're different. I go, yeah, I'm different. So here's what we can do. So Buddy like lived a long time after that without any of those issues. Also, cats with the urinary problems, like the urinary, the crystals and that form, one of the first things the veterinarians want to do is take away their magnesium and the calcium. Well, magnesium has to be available for the calcium to stay in solution. And we can find on these tests, oftentimes the calcium is higher than the magnesium, which really they're in a magnesium deficiency. And if they get the right magnesium on board, now it moves that calcium. So you're not having these crystals being formed. It's able to move through the kidney and stay in solution and not precipitate out. So there's a lot of urinary issues that are well handled by being able to direct this. And then again, if there's toxic metals, we know exactly where they're at, if it's a concern, what's happening. Another example is a cat that had some liver problems. So the blood test shows liver and they're doing liver things, but the numbers are still staying high. So I start on this guy. Well, I find out that the copper level is way up and copper backs up into the liver. Now, the blood test. So here's the catch. The fur analysis can measure 10,000 to 100,000 smaller increments than what can be determined on the blood test. So oftentimes things are missed in blood, which will actually show up on the ferritin tissue mineral analysis test. And also the blood has to stay pretty consistent. It doesn't have a wide range because it's about saving you right now. And so this interstitial fluid is what we're really looking at when we measure a hair test, which is being distributed for all the metabolic processes. Everything physiological that's happening in the body is going through the interstitial fluid, not about the blood. So we're really actually seeing more of a true shot of what's happening. So once I saw this copper was high, which is really an adrenal gland problem, but the liver makes many hormone precursors. So now we have this copper kind of backing up into the liver. Once we corrected the adrenal gland situation and was able to correctly reduce the copper without affecting the liver more, the liver problems went away.
Wow, that's so cool. Yeah, I think a lot of pet owners don't understand too that when we do a routine blood test, the levels of certain minerals and other things in the blood, it's not necessarily indicative, like you're explaining, of what's happening all the time in the body. It's just what's in the blood. And so the body wants to keep the blood at a very specific parameters. So just because, you know, your calcium looks good or magnesium or other parameters like that, it may not mean that the rest of the body is okay. It's just that they're keeping the blood where it needs to be to survive.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So when a conventional vet might say, you know, the blood work looks good, everything's fine, it's actually not, it's only telling you a small piece of the picture.
Exactly.
And that's why this is such a cool, a different way to test for health issues that may be subclinical.
That's where too, the pet parent knows something isn't right. They go into the vet and you have the tests and the exam and then all that comes back looking, like you said, looks fine. Nothing's wrong. But you know, they know something is not right. Something is changing. Just can't put your finger on it. Because again, the blood's this narrow range. It's looking at a much smaller volume. It's only a window of that minute of that day when the blood was drawn. It doesn't give this broader picture like the ferritin tissue mineral analysis testing does. Yeah, it really opens up what's happened and what's going on and what could be. And it gives you this opportunity to really make, as a doctor, better, significant nutritional recommendations.
So is this something that you would recommend for a cat on just an annual checkup?
Yes, it's part of what I recommend for their annual visit is that you get doing these. So initially, when you do the first one, which here's the other caveat, is that a baby, we like to think of these little babies, kittens, oh, they're so cute and they smell so good and that they're like perfect, but they're not. They're a picture of what the mother was. And the mother's body looks at these fetuses as a way to dump toxins. So oftentimes babies can be born very toxic, but you don't see that in them because the body's job is to survive. And so it hides things in order to appear to be externally to our eye, everything's copacetic. So this test can start with the regular routine early kitten visits, and you do it then. And oftentimes it takes a few of them, like we don't do them closer than 3 months. So you may have one and then in somewhere between 3 to 6 months, you do another and then you see where you're at. And then you may do another one in 6 months. And then after that, it becomes part of an annual visit.
That's very cool. Yeah. Very different than the traditional approach.
But it can become a part of traditional because if we look back also at health veterinary, the veterinary profession, even before it was really veterinarians, everything was about what's wrong with the livestock, what's wrong with this animal. It was looking at, is there a vitamin excess? Is there a vitamin deficiency? What minerals? Test the soil, which for us would be testing foods or their environment. It was all about that because we didn't have all these drugs. And the drugs are just changing what is visual, but it's way at the end of the problem. If we want to find the original why, we want to get to the very beginning, this is where we have to go. And this is where the veterinary profession, the health industry was for centuries and centuries. It was about correct the nutrition, use some herbs, something that that animal would go find and eat anyway out in the wild. You add some of that in to tweak something and then get that body back into that homeostatic nutritional paradigm, which we're so terrible at doing because most don't do this and don't understand it. And there is it's a fun puzzle. I mean, there's some training. It's not just like, oh, here's the test, here's what we do. There is some learning that goes along with it, but it's really fun. It's like being a detective. And it is so cool when you learn and know what it's telling you and you realize, ah, that's why this has happened. And that's why this is going on. I think about all these cases before I learned this. I mean, I've been doing this now for almost 20 years. But before I had it as a tool and like, oh, I didn't know like where I went wrong. I mean, I know where I went wrong now, but at the time you're doing this and you're thinking, okay, it should work. And then you start collecting up these skeletons in your veterinary closet of these ones that aren't going right. Why are they not going right? Because you haven't gotten to the real why.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool to learn about the history of it. And just we're living in an age of, you know, the highly processed foods and diets that really none of us humans or animals have had to deal with before, but that's just the norm for so many animals is eating the highly processed foods and, you know, looking back to see what it used to be so that we're trying to get them back on more ancestral diets and looking at that as a way to correct some of the more common health problems that we're facing nowadays with cats.
And that's always got to be the starting point, but I can say because of history, because of their lifespan, because of environmental toxins and chemicals that usurp many of these minerals and nutrients, that there isn't any food, no matter how good it is, that's going to provide that body everything that individual needs for any stage of its life. It's just impossible now. Old days, long time ago, yeah, you could improve your diet and you could correct everything, but it's not concentrated enough in the foods for the volume that some of these bodies need. So what we're actually doing as doctors is we're applying these vitamins and minerals at a pharmaceutical level in order to get a change in these bodies, to fill in these gaps for these metabolic physiological processes that have to happen. And then once you get those gaps filled in, now you start backing off. Now the doses become less, the items they need become less, and you get to that point where, okay, there's one or two things, but other than that, with that really good food program using the archetype, there's very little else you have to do.
That's very cool. So what are some of the types of recommendations that you, so some examples from this type of test that you might then suggest correcting?
Well, okay. So the first three are going to be that are key is calcium, magnesium, and zinc because of where they tend to be, because of all the different toxic metals and minerals that interact and affect those because of the significance. Like zinc alone is needed just as an enzyme and over 200 reactions in the body. So it's needed for the immune system, for the skin, for the liver. There's not hardly any system in the body that doesn't need zinc. And zinc is key to keeping inflammation down. So we're in an era of inflammatory conditions. And the adrenals are going to need this zinc. So there isn't anybody out there that I've found that is not zinc deficient. And there is not a zinc toxicity. They would have to be abusedly over a long period of time before the zinc became toxic. Everybody needs some zinc. So zinc is one, and then a calcium and magnesium. But you have to figure out the pH of the body makes a difference on which forms of the calcium and magnesium that would be recommended. Also, if the magnesium is super low than the calcium, we start with just adding the magnesium. We don't always use them at that 2-to-1 1-to-1 ratio as what might be considered the norm. So you got to have the test to know, but those are the three key ones is going to be calcium, magnesium, and zinc. And if we can start getting those leveled and more of these cats, getting them to where I say level close to that optimal line where we want them to be, then many of the problems you see, the allergies, stress factors, thyroid in it. A cat that's hyperthyroid needs 250 times more calcium than a euthyroid cat. It is the calcium deficiency that makes their heart beat like it's going to jump out of their chest. calcium alone in any hyperthyroid cat, that is what has been missing for too long. That is part of why they got to that position. And the thyroid is so starved for calcium. Those cats oftentimes will take a human dose of calcium for 2 or 3 months before the dose becomes less in order to accommodate the deficiency that has created that hyperthyroid state. And that is rarely discussed or applied in veterinary practices. They don't know that.
Yeah, I would agree. So in your opinion, what's the best, you know, baseline diet for most cats to be on? If, you know, if they aren't able to do this test and you just would suggest a general recommendation for a diet, what would you say for that?
Again, this is a little bit more than just diet because, again, the diet isn't going to provide everything they need. But to feed the cats what a cat would eat in the real world. So what do they eat? Birds and mice, mostly that. In some areas, maybe bugs. They get bugs. They eat different kinds of bugs. They like that. So to feed them those things that they eat in real world, you know, a mouse has 750 milligrams of taurine in it. The next closest thing that a cat would eat in the same volume is chicken, and it's like 320. The jump between, you know, so like why do cats need so much taurine? For some reason in the real world, they're provided mice, which have a lot of taurine in them. And so we're back to that. If they're allowed to eat what they would in nature, which was their modus operandi in the wilds, then we wouldn't have the heart problems in the cats because they were already getting so much more taurine out of that mouse than they were any bird. You see? So yeah, so feeding the raw diet, that's like for cats, feeding foods that have a lot of moisture in them, because pretty much everything the cat eats is pretty moisture concentrated, not dried up things. So those are really important to try to get that cat's system. And that also, if they're on that high moisture content food, obviously you're not going to see them drinking as much water. So you don't want to get worried about that because they've got the moisture in what they're eating. But as you feed that, you will see less kidney problems, less bladder stones, less, you know, everything that goes wrong with them.
So are there any other things you would want people to know about this type of testing and how it could compare to the traditional tests that we typically use for cats?
Well, one thing would be is that it's not terribly expensive compared to many tests. So when you're looking at budgeting, I mean, this is a go-to place in order to find a bigger spectrum of what's going on. So cost-wise, it's less. The fact that the samples can be collected at home is good for a cat versus having to go to some place that's scary and have blood drawn or big machines and all that. So those are two things that work really well for a cat situation. We've discussed the differences between the blood and the fur test, so I won't go into that again. But the value of the test is that it gives us a deeper picture of what's going on metabolically than what the typical tests do. So we're able to work that picture a little bit more closely and be more accurate, especially for the cats that are so clever about hiding symptoms. Now, it's not like a dog, which is like in your face, and as soon as something's wrong, it's more obvious. Cats hide problems for a while, and sometimes by the time you see that it's there, it is kind of a big deal, aside from the fact that kind of like try to not torment them and take them sooner than what they have to go to the vet because they don't like it. So being able to have this test that picks up these minute situations before the blood test does and allows the cat parents to feel like, okay, let's do this and let's do this now rather than thinking, okay, I would wait. So I think that's pretty key to being able to do the fur tissue mineral analysis testing.
Okay. So I'm sure some of our listeners might be interested in trying it. Is there a way that they can contact you to get help with that?
So they can go to my website. It's lifeextendmethod.com. And then there's a section on there about this testing. There's a section for the dog, a section for cats, and a section for horses. So they can go to the cat section and look about the info on there, and then they can email me from the site and let me know. They can order it up and then I send them the info and then we get going on it.
Okay, that's great. You have a final last tip to leave our cat owners with, just something that they can go away with and implement right away to help their cats?
Well, I guess the right away thing, but they already probably know that now, is about changing their diet. That's the easiest thing to do right away. And cats being cats, sometimes that's a challenge. Is like, want some of these that are a little bit older that have already been on kibble, oh my gosh, they're not going to give that up. So then get away from extruded kibble and go to baked kibble. You know, there are ways that you can make it be less worse, but still allow the cat to have what it thinks it has to have. And then trying to sneak some of these other things in, you know, like through treats and snacks and other ways to transition them. There are some cats that'll never be happy not having that kibble for whatever reason. It's just how they are. But there are better brands out there. Lotus has a baked kibble. Stella and Chewy's has a baked kibble. There's, I think, close to 20 brands now that have some kind of a baked kibble. And then there's some of the lightly cooked. But again, that's a different kind of a texture than what those are. So that's going to be their quickest, like, do something now while they're working on improving everything else about their dietary constituencies.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for your time again. We will have links to Dr. Frick's website down below. And for everyone listening, don't forget to check Dr. Frick out and go ahead and follow and subscribe and leave reviews if you found the podcast interesting. But that's all the time we have for today. So thank you so much, Dr. Frick, for your time. I'm sure we'll have lots of cat parents who are interested in following up and learning more about this and hopefully getting their cats tested right away.
Sure thing. Yeah, it's always fun. I appreciate you and I appreciate Pet Summits for the opportunity.
Okay, until next time.